Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi everyone, and welcome to a brand new season of Confessions of a Debut Novelist with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Lottie Hazel about her contemporary novel, Piglet. Lottie is a writer, researcher, and board game designer living in Warwickshire. She's currently undertaking a PhD at Loughborough University and formerly worked as a marketing manager at Penguin Random House. In this episode, we discuss how Lottie does what she calls playful method writing, by cooking along with Piglet to connect with her character's headspace, why food is a great way for writers to explore characters, and after working in marketing at a publisher, Lottie's insider advice for new authors understanding and navigating the marketing side of publishing. Before we hear that, here's Lottie with an excerpt from Piglet.
"I have to tell you something," he said, leaning over her in bed like that, his face looked slack, full of blood. His eyes were creasing and his lips were curling. Tears, she realised, her mind slow, fear unfurling in the bowl of her pelvis. He reached out, his hand touching her thigh. His fingers crept at her and she felt her eyes swivel in her head, looking down at his clutching extremities. She heard him talking, saw him grasping, and noticed how her flesh puckered beneath his fingertips. In between the folds of their sheets, he told her what he had done. She lay broken, her body naked, looked as if it had been spilled. "Do you still want to get married?" he asked, and she could not bring herself to shrug. "I have to get up soon," she said. "There was work in the morning, a wedding in 12 days. He nodded. He lay down next to her, mirroring her cold body, two question marks in their premarital bed.
Hi Lottie, welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, Piglet.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to chat about it.
Can you start by telling us what Piglet's all about and introduce the novel to us?
Yes, I can. So Piglet is a story about our satisfactions and what happens when we kind of fail to be satisfied by the life that we've built for ourselves. And it centers around our protagonist Piglet in the run-up to her wedding. And 2 weeks before she's due to be married, her fiance Kit reveals this terrible secret that threatens to derail the life that she's built for them. And it follows her over this kind of spectacular derailment and culminates in their wedding together. And it's kind of a story about her attempt to find a sense of satisfaction herself, and a lot of that is seen through the lens of food. So lots of food scenes.
So much food. It was an absolute treat for me. I love food writing and just reading about people eating. And I was ill when I was reading this book and I had no appetite, but I think if I read this book on a normal week, I would have been absolutely starving.
Yeah, I say to people when I hand over a copy, it's like I prescribe snacks as like a necessity because you will need them.
Yeah, absolutely. I wondered if you can remember kind of the starting point of your inspiration. Like, did it come from Piglet herself or this kind of this kind of revelation. We don't find out what the revelation is, although I think you can kind of give it a good guess. But I was wondering kind of where that starting point was for you.
Yeah, it was the starting point for me was the dinner that Piglet makes for Kit the night after he reveals his confession to her, and she's making them a carbonara. And the scene is kind of this dogged domestic pursuit of, like, I will continue to make dinner even though my life has been cleaved in half, like, something bad has happened here. And I was fascinated by that dedication to continue and put away shopping and be spiky with one another and still be cooking for someone even though you feel really hurt by them. And I feel that felt to me to be really curious, and that felt like a real situation. I wanted to know what had happened between these two people and what was going to happen. And so we started there. Well, I started there and moved outwards.
Did you, so that scene came to you kind of just completely out of the blue, and then you went from there? Did you kind of sit with the scene for a while, or did you start straight away kind of building the world around them?
That came out of the blue, and originally it was written slightly differently, so there were no names, so it was kind of he and she, and it was kind of more of a free writing piece. So it was time there was like there were no speech marks in it, so some of it was confused about, whether the list of putting away the groceries was speech or whether it was just a list on the page. And so it came to me kind of really undefined, and then my job from there was to work out not only what was happening and plot, but also kind of stylistic treatment as well, which was interesting in the interesting to develop.
Because you get the little snippets kind of throughout the novel, be it kind of almost what's to come or a little hint towards Piglet's mindset, and we find out before it happens that there's going to be this revelation 13 days before the wedding, and the novel kind of almost counts down to the wedding, and then has that kind of almost, I guess, a sense of dread and anticipation that you're building towards. And I wonder whether that structural decision happened kind of fairly on, or was that something that came later where you chose to kind of give it that, what's it called, like a ticking clock, I suppose.
I had always moved chronologically, besides those kind of splinters in the text that you're referring to, where we get a sense of what's happening in the past and the future. But the first edit, the first draft, sorry, was I call it the kind of like the PG version is the trash draft. Otherwise, I use a swear word.
You can swear next time.
it's the shit draft, and that didn't have any sense of urgency or the ticking that you describe. And then in the edit, I had a very, very, very heavy edit where it felt like the book really shed a skin, and that format really presented itself to me. I didn't really feel like I planned it. It was just like it felt very obvious. It's like, no, this is how the book needs to be structured. It makes so much sense for the content to reflect the structure in terms of the kind of anxiety and the time evaporating around Piglet. So yeah, that happened much later on when the book was going through a heavy edit.
Was that something that you were doing, the editing process with? Was that something that you did, or was that kind of from advice from someone else, or was it done with your editor? How did that work?
So that was just me. And that was I was I wrote a version of Piglet as part of a creative PhD. And so at that time, I was kind of doing two versions of the book at once, one for my thesis and one for agent submission. So this one that I had to have the heavy edit on was for agent submission. And then it did have another edit again in collaboration with my agent when I pitched it to her and we started to collaborate. But that was much lighter and it mu was much more itself as a book. It was that first one, which was just me kind of like in November and December, not talking to anyone and going mad.
I have to talk about the name Piglet. We don't find out Piglet's real name until one very small mention at the end. Can you tell us the significance of the title and her name and her nickname, sorry, and where it all came from?
Yeah, I just find nicknames to be fascinating. I'm the person that will rarely call someone that I know by their full name. But I find nicknames, especially nicknames for women, and how they can stick in a familial sense, I think they can be so useful for conveying a sense of relationship and how someone has come to be in a family unit. And her name not being revealed was a bit of a challenge logistically when writing about it, because obviously in a work setting, people aren't calling her Piglet, so working around that kind of thing was some fun kind of hurdles to work through. But it was one of those things where that was her name arrived to me almost immediately. Like when I started writing about it, I knew that I wanted to look at nicknames and the importance of that. And in a very early version of the book, no one had real names. So Kit was the fiance, and you know, everyone was kind of nameless. And it was, I think I was trying to figure out how to write about her identity. But that got quite complicated quite quickly, so everyone had to have names beside Piglet.
Yeah, the logistics, like when people decide that they're not going to give their character a name at all. And I know people are kind of bent over backwards trying to do that, and it's really hard.
It's so hard.
Can you tell us a bit more about Piglet, how you kind of created her character? I mean, there's always a debate, isn't there, about, you know, what makes a character likable or relatable or what have you. And I just thought she was such a great character because she felt so real, and even her more extreme behavior, you get the threads of where it came from, and it just feels believable. So can you tell us about how you kind of went about creating her?
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talk about likable characters, because doesn't that come up frequently? Whereas
all the time.
Yeah, I'm not that interested in likeable characters. Mm. Compelling, absolutely. Mm. Every character I read, I want to be compelled by. But likeable, I can take or leave. Mm. But when I was writing Piglet, I playfully talk about doing something which I call method writing, which is, for Piglet, I was cooking along as I was writing the book. So everything she was cooking or eating, I was also cooking and eating, including the croque en bouche. Cannot make a croque en bouche.
Oh my goodness.
From my terrible experience.
That passage where she makes the croque en bouche, like one of the most stressful sections of a book I've ever read. Now you read it and you're thinking, it's literally shoe buns and creme pat. How can it be? Like, it's more stressful than, I don't know, a bomb going off or something. You're like, oh my goodness, just stop making it. You're driving me mad.
Yeah. Yes, it's excruciating. Yeah, I feel oddly proud about my... I hope my ability to engineer just terror with pastry. Life goals, I think. What were you asking me about?
So how do you create Piglet? You said you started with the scene and it kind of went from there. Were you kind of consciously creating kind of scenes around what you thought she was like as a character, or did you sit down and work in a kind of more methodical way to decide like who she was, you know, where her identity came from and all that sort of thing?
When it comes to characters, I am much more of a kind of heart and feeling writer, in terms of I don't map out CVs or, you know, language or anything like that. The way I connect with Piglet, I was cooking with her, and most of her big scenes involving food are the scenes that I wrote first, so they were kind of the bones of the book, which I then kind of wove together and started to write between them. And for me, the cooking for her especially was really important, because it felt like developing some kind of sensory empathy in which existed a reproductive writing space, not only to connect with her as a character, but also to put me in a headspace of a kind of emotive headspace for writing. That was really useful for me when it came to building character.
Mm. Can you tell us a bit more about the food writing then? Because it isn't really just Piglet that has kind of issues with food or kind of, you know, emotional connections to it. We see that with her, we see it with their sister. But food is obviously plays an important role in her relationship with Kit and her family and friends. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of the relationship between these characters and food?
Yeah, for me, food is everything. Like, I want to know what people have for breakfast. I want to know what's for dinner. And I think it's such a productive tool for writers as a shorthand to illuminate character and relationships. And I don't know if the books that I write in the future will be so centered on food, but I think I will always turn to, what has someone brought to a dinner party or what someone left on their plate as a way to explore character and what it might say about them. And I'm interested in how food intersects with other kind of larger dynamics at play. So, gender roles, class, family dynamics. I think there's so much to be explored there, and I hope that readers find those threads throughout the book as well that I really enjoyed pulling together.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the stuff that was kind of quite snobby from Piglet's point of view about, her family coming down, and then they end up going to Nando's, and you can just feel her kind of, despair that she has to go to Nando's. And it's all that, what's that feeling of like, you're judging Piglet for the way she's judging her family, but you can also see it in, I mean, I'm a complete food obsessive, so maybe this is just me, but I love my food and I love going out somewhere fancy, and then if someone doesn't, I don't know, someone's never eaten, I think my dad had never eaten or didn't know what chipotle was, and I'm just like, how can you not know what chipotle is, so it's all that, those kind of things that interplay, like you said, with class and age and gender and all this. It's fascinating. I'm even kind of the sort of person that finds those threads on Twitter where it's like, if you can only pick three things on your roast dinner, what would they be? And I'm looking at people's
Cruel, cruel
faces
question.
and judging people for picking, carrots. Like, why would you pick carrots out of everything? Yeah,
Potatoes, surely.
potatoes
Potatoes are a
are gonna be
must.
my number one. So, I mean, I have a joke with a friend of mine because I'm literally potato obsessed. So yeah,
All the
potato.
best people are.
But yeah, I love all the food stuff. So, and I find it, like you say, I find the kind of connection between food and relationships and everything so fascinating. So it's a great book for that. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your kind of your routine and how you approached writing this novel. Whether how much did you kind of plan? How much did you kind of go into it just completely kind of splurging on the page? Like, what was your like general writing routine like?
As a writer, I'm very committed to plot, and I'm in awe of writers who can sit down and say, "I'll just see where it takes me. I'll see what the characters do." Because I'm like, "What will they do? Where will they go if you don't know?" So I'm really a big proponent of plot. And the way I wrote Piglet was I planned out the plot beats for the first draft, which at the end of the first draft, as I've already told you, was terrible. But it was useful to have what I saw as a skeleton of the book there, so I could write freely and I could play. I think without those confines, I would just wander off and meander into the ether. I'm curious if I can write more consciously in the future, so not having to go through such a terrible draft in the first instance, but maybe that's a rite of passage for every book, I don't know. But certainly plotting first, writing second, then a very heavy edit. And then kind of polishing. It's kind of, I think my process is quite industrious rather than creative. I don't feel very exciting describing it to you.
I think that's the reality for most people, though. I mean, there's the illusion of, sitting down at your beautiful desk with a candle lit and a nice coffee, and the words just come to you. But that doesn't happen. Like, I don't know anyone that happens to. It's the case of sitting down, looking at your notes, despairing that what you wrote yesterday was crap. Like, all those things are part of it. Do you think that? I mean, I don't know whether it's wishful thinking, but do you think your process may have changed now, moving on to writing another book, or do you think you're going to still be doing the same kind of things you did with your first book?
I would like to think that it's evolving in some way, because I think with the first, this is true of Piglet, but it's more true of I'm writing a second book now, is that I'm writing scenes that I do like. I like them, and I think, well, this might not need much editing. I think this is quite a nicely formed scene, and it makes me feel something. But the question is, how do you make them into a book? That's always a thing about how does it stitch together and how does it become something that is worth the reader's time? And so I would like it to evolve. I'm going to try and evolve it for the next book. Whether that will work, I don't know. I can always fall back on writing something terrible and then trying to make it better.
Brilliant. I wondered whether you can remember a time where you decided that you were going to take your writing seriously, because I think a lot of us have that feeling where, you write for fun, you write as a kid, and then there's a point in time where you think, I want to be published, I want to have my words out there. Can you remember that moment and how you kind of made the moves to become in the publishing world?
That's such an interesting question because before I sold Piglet, I was writing short stories and poems and submitting them for prizes and stuff like that. So I'd always taken it seriously in that I had an awareness of the importance to build profile, I suppose, in terms of having a way to market myself. But I think in terms of the novel, I think that I became properly serious about that when I had decided to pursue my PhD because it was a opportunity to dedicate myself to a long form piece of fiction with a project in a kind of, which I think is kind of sad because I think that you one shouldn't have to wait for a project with a label on to write a novel. Like I think if you can do it, you shouldn't, and do it as quickly as you can. But I think that's when I was taking myself seriously. But I think that also says probably more about how I felt about my writing at that time. And I think it's probably growing confidence to follow through with the project. Like, as I was saying, I was favouring shorter forms because I could finish those in an afternoon or, a couple of days. But a novel, as is a responsibility.
Did you feel like you needed that almost validation to kind of keep going and carrying on?
I don't know if it's validation because I wouldn't say that I suffered with imposter syndrome, but I think it's more the kind of I think it's the structure of having something attached to the novel in a way. Having research questions attached to the novel was interesting in terms of its shaping because I wasn't only writing for the thesis version of the novel. I wasn't only writing that for the sake of writing it, but also to kind of answer academic questions as well. Which will be interesting. The next novel that I write, I shan't do a PhD for that one. It'll just be me and the page.
Yeah, I think that'd be quite an undertaking if you decided that every novel needed a PhD alongside
Yeah, that can't be my process.
it.
I can't be it.
No, not at all. I'm intrigued by this other version of the novel. Kind of how different is it, and is it more would you say like more academic? Like what's different about it? I'm guessing obviously it didn't go through the edits that Piglet went through when you sold it, but what's different about it?
Yeah, it's not too far. It's not hugely different. It's shorter, so it was extracted. But there's one quite significant difference, which experiments with kind of a hallucinatory realism. So the wedding scene, rather than just her and Kit and kind of her existential crisis, which is still very much rooted in reality, even though it's getting to be quite intense at that point. There's when she's in the church, she starts experiencing the world as if it is, edible, and it becomes almost kind of like this horror nightmare for her at that moment, at this kind of point of intense crisis. So that's one of the massive differences is the wedding scene is the thesis version is more experimental than the than what I call the commercial version. But both are interesting to write, and I'm pleased in a way that I've got that they both exist in the world.
Yeah, I'd love to write your kind of your horror writing, because I feel like you do that, particularly with the food. You do that kind of tension so well, and that kind of there's another scene in the book which I won't spoil, but takes place in well, there's a couple of scenes that take place in restaurants that are very stressful because you're just feeling like you're anticipating what's going to happen next and you're dreading it, but brilliantly done.
Yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with, I don't know if this is even a term or a genre, but like domestic thrillers. So like Leave the World Behind and Our Wives Under the Sea. Like
Oh,
I love that kind of like,
you're speaking my language, Lottie. That's two of my favorite books.
yeah. And I just think they're so brilliant. And so just you just feel the emotional intensity and the creep of them. And I just think as if I can capture any of that, that's the dream.
I love those books, so yeah, write that next. That'll be good.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you came to get your agent and how your book deal came about? Was it through your PhD that you found your agent?
No, it wasn't. So those two things are kind of running on fairly different tracks, although in parallel. So I was preparing my novel for submission in the winter of 2021 and then sent it out in January, which I always think is a good time to send out agent submissions because everyone's got like a right, I want this for this year, I'm going to try and acquire X, Y, and Z. And so I had targeted in a non-creepy, non-kind of serial killer way, my agent Harriet Moore, who has amazing collaborators like Sophie McIntosh and Nisha Dolan and Megan Nolan. So it was like she had this, it's like Sir list, and I was like, is this one person, like this would be the dream. And I sent it out to a few other people at the same time, and she replied almost immediately, and it felt like one of those things where it's like, oh, this feels fateful, where it was like a back and forth of it, exciting. Just at the beginning of an exciting relationship. And then I very quickly signed with her. And I was like, thank you. Didn't know I was a weird obsessive. Thank God I snuck in before you can discover me. And then Harriet is a brilliant editor. And so we were polishing Piglet together. And with her help, the book became even tighter and sharper and more focused, which benefits it in terms of the momentum that it has, I hope. And then I wasn't really, I had no legwork in this. She pitched it to publishers in October, and then it was sold to Doubleday in the UK and Henry Holt in the US later that month. So it was I think, quite quick in terms of usual publishing. And I feel really lucky to have connected with Harriet and to found in her a kind of like a faithful collaborator who thinks in similar terms to me, because I think that you could take Piglet in a very different direction. Mm-hmm. And when we were selling the book, there were some editors that were saying, oh, well, could you reveal what happens at the end, or had you thought about writing a different ending for it? And I'm really grateful for Harriet and my editors in the UK and the US that they had the same kind of vision as me for the book and wanted to kind of experiment in the same way that I did.
Absolutely. That kind of shared vision is so important, because it would be awful to change the book into something it wasn't and then regret it. And
yeah,
I wish I hadn't done that. But
yeah.
For the sake of being published. But I think sometimes you've got to fight for what you think is important about the book. And I'm glad it's the form it is.
Me too.
You've had quite a kind of interesting career in terms of your side involvement in publishing, because, and I think I wanted to ask you about this because I wondered whether it kind of made the whole industry easier to understand and navigate, because I think we all tackle it from a very outside point of view and it's very opaque. But you have worked for Penguin Random House and also freelance in the marketing department, and you've kind of seen it from the other side. Mm. And I wonder whether that helps you kind of when it came to understanding how your novel was going to be pitched or where it was going to sit. And did it make it easier to kind of keep your expectations in check about what was going to happen for Piglet, and give you that understanding of what publishing is really like?
Yeah, I think it undoubtedly helps. And I think in a way it makes me kind of, I think it's depressing in a way, because as you said, it's quite an opaque industry. So I think if you haven't worked inside of it or have an idea of the process, it can be firstly hard to infiltrate, or it's not clear exactly what kind of check boxes you should be looking to hit. And then secondly, it's not always clear what you should expect from a book campaign, like what you should expect from your marketing and publicity colleagues who you're working with on your book. So certainly it helped knowing how it worked from the other side. And I think it also is one of those things where I think that having been in the industry, I also was aware of things like comparative titles when I was pitching to my agent, where to find my agent, looking, like, I've looked at the acknowledgements of some of my favorite books. But I think just having a bit of a roadmap of how the life cycle of a book would work, I think was definitely helpful in my, not so much my expectations, but my knowledge of what to expect. So I suppose my expectation, it wasn't so much for managing my expectations, but knowing what might or might not work.
Yeah, I think it's difficult as well, because we see everyone else's marketing campaign and you're looking at it thinking, should I be getting this, or is it going to happen for me? And a lot of things obviously are done behind the scenes, which we're not aware of.
Yeah.
But you were able to kind of just almost, I suppose, sit back and think, I know what's happening behind the scenes, and it's okay.
Yeah. I also think it's that thing of being, having been a marketer in a large publishing house, that it's okay if you're a debut and say, being like, is this going to happen? Like, your marketer isn't offended by the question. And even if the answer is no, for whatever reason, it's still absolutely fine to ask and to, you know, and to advocate on behalf of yourself and your book. Like, I think as a novelist, you're still, maybe with alongside your agent, you're still the novel's one of their biggest champions. And so I think that goes, even once you've been acquired with your publisher, you know, adding to the energy of the campaign and asking what's going on is all crucial, I think.
When you're thinking of kind of marketing things and like comp titles and where it's pitched and how it could be marketed, are those things you think about once you've written a book, or are they things that you're thinking about as you're writing? Because I think this is something that comes up quite a lot, where some writers are dead against that and they're like, no, I don't think about, you know, how I'm going to pitch this or what the hook is. But then other writers almost write to a hook, to a pitch.
Yeah.
Where does it come for you? Like, does it come near the end or kind of nearer the beginning when you're writing?
I don't think that I'd be able to write to a hook, but I write the kind of books that I want to read. So in a way, the comps are like, I also enjoyed these books. And I think that if you read Piglet, you'd like X, Y, or Z. And so I think that for me, it's less of a kind of a conscious decision about what the comparative titles are and what the hook might be. It's more, I'd like to read something like this book. I'd like to create this. And I see there's a gap. No one else has done something that's quite like this. So that's where I'd like to position it. And I think that's more productive for me rather than trying to create a brief for myself. I think it's more following a desire of what I'd like to read.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had to ask you that because I wondered whether you've got kind of like a separate marketing hat and a separate writing hat, whether they kind of merge together. Fascinating. I always ask my guests this question because I think it's kind of useful to see what your experience has been. And I know you're kind of only just starting on your journey of being published, but obviously there are kind of ups and downs of being a debut. And what would your advice be to people who are maybe just embarking on having signed a contract and are anticipating their publishing journey ahead? What would your advice be to kind of stay sane, stay happy throughout that journey?
I think I take great comfort in being proud of my work. And I think everyone who gets to the point of having a book published, there's someone that wants to read that book. It wouldn't be published if not. And I think take comfort in that and take confidence from that. And if you feel like you want to advocate for your book in some way on whatever platform, know that you should do that because of, you know, it being bought to be published, like it wants to be read. And so I think that would be my piece of advice, is to kind of like trust and find a sanctuary in yourself and in your work. And I think that would be it. Yeah,
a lot of people I think turn to new writing when they're going through kind of the publishing process because they find it a comfort. And also I know people that have, when they're on the submission process, they've started writing a new book. Personally, I could not do that because I just think it's the most stressful couple of weeks of my life, and I can't imagine being in a space to be creative at that point. But I take my hat off to those who do manage it. Lottie, finally, I'd love to find out what you're writing next, if you can give us any kind of teaser at all about what might be next for you.
Well, I think I'm staying within the realms of the kind of intensely emotive domestic fiction. But after our conversation, maybe I do need to kind of dance over to the horror side.
I don't want to sway you, but I mean, I think I'd love to, I know that I would really enjoy it. I'm really into that kind of slightly blurry, horror-y, folk horror-y area. Write that next.
Me too. No, I think what I'm writing next, as ever, I think it will always focus on the kind of grit and the tension between relationships and between people. And I think that can be extrapolated out to any genre, but that is what I'm most interested in those moments.
Yeah. Oh, well, I can't wait to read what you write next. And I'm intrigued to see how much food is going to feature next time.
I'm sure I won't be able to resist loads.
But in the meantime, thank you so much, Lottie, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Claire. It's been a pleasure.
That was Lottie Hazel talking about her contemporary novel, Piglet, which is out on the 25th of January and available to pre-order now. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it'd be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.